on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 94-year-old Marvin Shields of Visalia, California, a Navy veteran of World War II. He served on the troop transport USS Mount Vernon before joining the crew of the heavy cruiser USS Pensacola. You'll find some photos and even a little video of Mr. Shields on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, even a photo of him in a sailor suit as a toddler. Guess that destiny was clear early on. We heard about how he grew up in Michigan, one of seven children. Two of his brothers also served in World War II. Marvin had to give up his senior year of high school to go to a civilian conservation corps camp, sending most of the money he earned home so his family wouldn't lose its home. He'd experienced some of the most intense battles of the Pacific aboard the USS Pensacola, but he insists he wasn't scared, just motivated to stop the Japanese from coming to the American mainland.
My life had been life, but my brothers, they survived too.
There had to be some moments where you weren't sure you were going to survive.
We didn't care then.
Yeah. Well, and I know folks who know you here in Visalia, a lot of them know you from church. I know you're in Grace every Sunday. Is that a faith that you had at that time?
No, I was a Catholic then.
Yeah. Did you have a feeling, though, that God was going to protect you out there? Not so much.
No, I couldn't figure why it was happening that a person was a tap dancer, he lost his legs. A person that sings had lost his head. I mean, it was a standing thing then.
Didn't seem fair.
No.
Did you always believe you were going to make it through?
No, but I made it known that if I was crippled, I wouldn't come back. Even after a while, I wouldn't want to be empty.
And I'm sure that from midway on, you saw a lot of guys in those kind of conditions.
Well, them two guys that were in the CC camps with me, we hooked them out of the water, and that was Orlin Romano. And another guy was with us then.
So what you're talking about now is Tarawa, which is often overlooked. People talk a lot about Iwo Jima, and you were there too. We'll talk about it. But Tarawa was really devastating for the amount of American casualties they were, capturing a very small portion of land. And the Marine Corps learned a lot of lessons there about blowing up reefs before they went in because so many got hung up.
We used, I think, the British maps to get in there. And we run aground halfway in. We couldn't get back out, and you can't go any further. Mm-hmm. They just picked us off in the bunkers they had there.
I guess maybe this is something to try to understand. What was it like when the enemy planes were coming at your ship?
There was a lot of other ships there, too.
Right.
I mean, we had DDs and DEs and all of them behind us, and we had picket ships on the outskirts, and so we knew where they were coming. But we've done our best.
That ever strike you, the magnitude of all this, of just how massive these forces were?
I thought we were better. If there would have been aircraft carriers in Pearl Harbor when they bombed the battleships, then it would have been a different war.
Yeah.
But all of our aircraft carriers were out to sea,
yeah.
Except Saratoga was in dry dock.
So this incident that you describe at Tarawa, explain the situation to me, where you pulled up two guys and you happen to know who they were?
Yeah, they were in the CC camps with me in 1939.
But tell me what happened, how you guys found them.
They were floating in the water. The LSTs that went in were stuck on the sand barriers.
Uh-huh.
And they couldn't back up, they couldn't go forward. So they were just picked to hell.
Right, so these guys had been shot somewhere in there. And you happened to bring the bodies aboard your ship?
Yeah, our ship, yeah.
And you were topside?
Yeah.
And you recognized these two faces?
Orlin Romano, I did, yeah, right, yeah.
What was that like for you?
He was a joker of the crowd and all that. And, it was just bring him up and lay him aside.
Is that hard to believe, that this guy they're pulling up is a guy you knew?
Yeah.
I mean, of all the people in the war, that's quite a coincidence, isn't it?
Well, even when I went aboard the troop ship, I heard a voice in the next room, and I recognized that voice. And he was from forestry. He studies forestry in Michigan or Michigan State.
Huh.
But I knew that voice, and so when I went in around the corner there to look in on him, that was our chaplain.
Huh. Small world. When you're at Tarawa and they pull up a guy that you know,
Yeah.
How did that make you feel?
Who's next?
Maybe you. Yeah. How did you deal with that at the time, that reality?
I wasn't shaken or anything like that. War is war, and part of us would die and part wouldn't. Yeah, then from there we went on to Kwajalein and Enwetok and all the little islands like Wotji.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a crew division our own about that time called Chester was the first, then us, and then the Salt Lake City behind us. We always traveled like three of next morning we'd wake up, find only two of us. We didn't know what happened to the other ship.
Mm.
But it went another way, and then we went another way, and we never always traveled as a group.
So basically, the role that you played during this time, as I understand it, is yours. And you mentioned some of those spots where you were throughout the Pacific, but your ship actually went quite a ways north, didn't it?
You mean Bering Sea?
Yeah, that's pretty far north. How did you go from Tarawa and Kwajalein and these places all the way to the very northern reaches of the Pacific and the Bering Sea?
Well, we traveled in there alone.
Uh-huh.
See, up in Alaska, we had destroyers that could operate good in that water,
mm-hmm.
like the Detroiter and the Raleigh and the Concord. And there was five of them up there with four stacks. We had two stacks.
Mm-hmm.
But they could operate in that water. Yeah, we went down there, and we stayed in a fog bank for 2 days with Russian planes overhead circling us. And we stayed in that for 2 days. And when one plane left, another plane was there. So they knew where we were, and they couldn't see us, but we knew where they were, too.
The Russians were keeping their eyes on you.
And if they would have caught us crossing the Bering Sea, they would have interned us.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. We crossed their waters. See, we own part of that Bering Sea, and then they own the other part.
So you're up there near Alaska, and then you turn around, and you go all the way back down to Hawaii.
Yeah, one day we're wearing a whole sea bag to keep warm. Chipping ice on the ship, and then next day we're in our sunsuits again, shorts and that, laying on the deck at night. And so,
do you ever wonder who was calling those shots?
I don't know who was.
And then before too long, you guys were out shelling places like Iwo Jima and Saipan.
Yeah, Ulithi, and that was a round base where all our ships got in and stayed there until it was they formed a party to travel. So we were actually, by Tokyo Rose, we were actually sunk six times.
Only six?
Yeah.
Is that why she called you the Gray Ghost?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Galloping Ghost and Gray Ghost.
That was the nickname that Tokyo Rose, the Japanese propagandist, gave your ship. I guess maybe to cover her own behind because she kept saying that you had sunk, huh?
Yeah, well, they thought we sunk, but we didn't get really hit too bad in a lot of them battles. But when we got to Iwo, that's when we got it.
Well, let's talk about that, but first tell me about Tokyo Rose. Did you actually hear her any of her broadcasts where she was talking about you guys?
Yeah, on the ship, yeah.
So you're on your ship,
yeah,
listening to her say that your ship has sunk.
Yeah, they tapped a little letter, and we read the letter and that.
Uh-huh. How did you react to that?
We left. We left because the next day we're at another island in a group like Wolji. Now, Chester, and then us, and then Salt Lake City. All three of us bombed that one island that day. So we turned our gun onto another small island. I think I've got the picture in there of blowing that island up. That's where they carried the ammunition in that little island.
And mm.
In the one we were bombing, they didn't have ammunition.
Well, I guess when you hear Tokyo Rose say that you've sunk and you know you haven't, then you know not to take anything else she says seriously.
For granted, yeah.
You said a moment ago that Iwo Jima is where things got dicey. Tell me about that. What did you experience? What did you see?
Well, at that time, the three heavy cruisers, Chester, us, and Salt Lake City, we had flocks of boats, and it looked like a polka dot setting there.
Mm-hmm.
The three cruisers, the Chester, go around the outskirts, low speed. We had to have, in our boilers, we have different tips for flare. We were at our low 19s on to travel real slow to creep along this island and try and draw their fire. The second day we went around, nothing happened, driving slow along the coast, and they had caves up there.
Yeah.
They had railroad tracks in them caves and everything to bring guns up. So the next day, the Chester came. So then the fourth day, Salt Lake City came. Then the Chester came. And the fifth day, we came slow.
Mm-hmm.
I got pictures in that, too, how we got we took six shells into us from them guns in the caves there.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't fire till the fifth day, and we lost quite a few men then.
Those six hits, that happened once the invasion actually was taking place, right? But as I understand it, you guys really for a couple of months went to Iwo several times to shell the island. Because the invasion doesn't happen until mid-February of 45, but you guys have been there in December of 44 and January of 45.
And like I say, a couple of times we took and divided our cruiser division. Where the Salt Lake went one way and Chester another way.
But once the invasion starts in the middle of February, this is what you're talking about. You guys are circling the island.
Yeah.
And you took six hits.
Yeah.
From the Japanese guns on Iwo Jima, three officers and 14 men were killed.
Yeah. I think it was 17 men, but actually killed.
Right, with the three officers and the 14 enlisted. Yeah. So that's 17 men killed and then almost 120 more injured. You must have seen some of that.
We felt it.
How close were you to some of those hits?
I was down in the boiler room.
You're down in the boiler room, so you feel this ship shaking.
Oh, yeah, servant air vents or fans up there. A couple pellets come down through there.
Really? So some of the shrapnel from these shore guns actually came down to where you were in the boiler.
That's three decks down.
That's got to be pretty scary.
It was all do or die.
You don't know what else is coming, right? One of those hits, you wonder when the next one's going to hit?
Well, we never fell a couple decks down.
Yeah.
But it was bad when we got out. I've got pictures here of it on fire.
We're talking about Iwo Jima, and I imagine that's one of the closest calls you had.
Yeah.
When your ship got hit six times, but you weren't one of the men who was hurt by that.
No.
But while you were still there, you saw some things that millions of people have seen photographs of or maybe even some moving film of, but you actually saw in the moment when it happened. That flag on top of Mount Suribachi?
Yeah, I was looking through a 5-inch gun, a scope on a 5-inch gun, when that first flag went up, the small flag.
The smaller flag.
Yeah. I was just looking at the Marines going up there, and then I think there was a photographer from Hollywood or something with them.
With the second group?
Yeah, with Rosenthal.
Joe Rosenthal took the world-famous photo of the second flag that went up.
Yeah.
And you saw that one, too.
Yeah, after... it was up there quite a bit later.
And we'll try to explain some of that when we come back. It's break time again for now. If you're a regular listener to Hometown Heroes, no doubt you've heard the story of why there were two different flag raisings on Iwo Jima's Mount Suribachi. If you're not familiar with that, we'll give it to you in a nutshell and find out what that sight meant to a young sailor named Marvin Shields and how it felt to visit Washington, D.C. recently and see that scene preserved in bronze at the Marine Corps Memorial. Navy veteran Marvin Shields, our guest today, and he'll bring us down the home stretch when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. If you've spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, And then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that honor flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.